And I will go immediately to the question of that was asked me by Brother Emoto about Carter, his emergence. I think that you are right in terms of your feeling about whether or not Carter will amount a progressive policy toward Africa. I would simply just say to you already that he has made a series of major blunders. I would also refer to you to the today's issue of the Daily Times, in which a brother by the name of Haroon Adamu has a very perceptive analysis of the situation, writing here from Nigeria. But what he says essentially, and I'd agree with it, is that there have already been some steps taken by Carter which shows that it will be business as usual. And unless black people, both in the United States and in the rest of the African world, signal quite clearly, quite early, that they want a progressive policy, it will be business as usual. If we can look at the individuals that he has selected to run his foreign policy, from Andrew Young all the way down to the Secretary of State. The question of about black power, I think, is a very interesting question, because I'm of the opinion that we have not sufficiently, many of us who were involved in the black power movement, understood the ramifications of the black power movement. I simply want to not to develop its contours, but to say that black power did not just disappear from the scene in a puff of smoke, that black power did leave behind it concrete manifestations of its presence. Although there are many who are now in the bourgeois class in the United States who do not want to own up to the fact that they are direct descendants of the black power movement, we now have judges and congressmen and people in jobs, and we have a whole range of individuals who were never there before the black power movement. And so they owe their very existence, we owe whatever progress we have made in the United States in the last 10 years in material terms, particularly also in the, with the question of identity, the Pan-African movement coming off of black power, to that particular concept. How is it that we in the United States can make the linkage with progressive third world countries? I think that that is quite easy. It goes back to the question the sister asked about the CIA, and I think that is that we show with our works what we are for and what we are against. And I think that that is the only way that people in the final analysis will judge us. If in a situation we are for progressive African governments, if we are for a progressive foreign policy, if we show that with our works, if we struggle against those things that are oppressing black people, then I think we put the lie to those who say that we are CIA agents. And that we say it not only in Africa, but they also say it in the United States. And it's amazing to me that if individuals look at our situation, how they can see that in our relationship to state power, we have any role to play in the fundamental oppression of other people of African descent. I want to say that I apologize. I applaud the brother from Senegal and his position. I happen to think that culture is more than, as some people have alluded to here, the question of singing and dancing, parties and girls and games. I think that culture fundamentally determines the way in which political strategy manifests itself. It is not just a question of fun and games, not just a question of being proud of our particular origin. Yeah, it is a question. It is a question that culture determines the way in which we shape our political strategy. So, I at least begin with the question of culture and take it one step further than most individuals.
You have 1 minute, brother. 1 minute.
What did you say?
Your microphone isn't on. Punch your microphone.
You have 1 minute.
Yeah, that's good.
All that time?
Yeah.
Just the last minute.
You got five minutes.
I would like to say to the brother from Senegal that I am in solidarity with his view as to the importance of culture. The reason being that culture is not, as some people have alluded to, simply the fact that we are proud of our origins. Culture is not just fun and games. Culture is not just what some people in the United States have called pork chop nationalism. Culture is the way in which we express our political strategy. It is possible for us to have an objective, concrete, material situation, and yet, because we are African people, to respond to that situation in a different way. And so I think we should take culture beyond the simplistic manifestations that some people take it, right to the very heart of political struggle, right to the very heart of liberation, and right to the place where it belongs. For if we do not do that, then I would ask the question, what is liberation for? I want to be able to identify the shape of my liberation after the movement is over.
Nice.
I make a plea to the platform again. We really are sort of pushing the time.
I'd like to very briefly touch on what I consider to be the four major questions. First, the question of what does it mean to talk about liberation and socialism? Quite clearly, precisely, and briefly, what I mean by socialism is essentially that body of theory that comes from revolutionary practice, which around the world is known as Marxism-Leninism. That is the guiding body of knowledge which sums up the world's practice and experience. Moreover, concretely, the dictatorship of the proletariat in any country is consistently throughout the 20th century been used as a definition of what constitutes socialism. The domination of other classes by any class other than the proletariat obviously is not socialism. The principal contradiction in a capitalist society is the class struggle. In the United States, our strategy for revolution is the United Fronts Against Imperialism, in which obviously petty bourgeois forces and other elements play a critical role. When we talk of the national question in the United States, we essentially mean two things. Mainly because in the historic homeland of Afro-Americans in the Black Belt South, in the southern part of the United States, where black people were held as slaves, we have been forced out of this area through the mass migrations around World War I and World War II, and therefore the struggle has a dual character. Throughout the entire country, the main task is the question of democratic rights. These democratic rights are not possible under the capitalist system precisely because it is the denial of these democratic rights that provides the basis for capital accumulation, and obviously that's what the system is about. However, in the deep Black Belt South, what we mean by liberation is to raise up the slogan of self-determination. And the only way it makes sense in anywhere in the world to talk about self-determination for a nation is to talk about the nation existing in a concrete place. That is to say, to have land, to have some cultural integrity, to have a language, to have a common economic life. That this is the historic development of nations throughout the world, and this is the basis on which the slogan and the demand, the democratic demand, the revolutionary demand of self-determination would be raised. But in that area, to raise it any other place, it becomes a divisive tool that disunites and divides the working class, and anything that does that holds the socialist revolution back. The question of why merge and what progress hasn't been made. First of all, the question of merger is because in the United States we have a task, and that task is to make a fighter for one a fighter for all. It is because the revolutionary struggle in the United States requires working class leadership with a working class ideology. And the fact is, there is one working class in the United States. People are in the United States from all over the world. It is the nature of the capitalist system as it becomes, as it extends throughout the globe with its imperialist tentacles to draw in the peoples of the world so that it can better exploit them inside the very heart of the production process. In Detroit, in the motor factories, for example, there are Arab workers, there are Puerto Rican workers, there are black workers, and many of these people have just come and remain tied to their homeland. On the other hand, many have been there for many generations and have become part of the one, the single working class in the United States, and therefore, when we say the working class, we don't mean an undifferentiated body of white faces. We mean the faces of the world. That is the very nature of the United States, that everyone in the world is there. It's a part of the one single working class. Now, the ideology of the working class is proletarian internationalism, that any bourgeois ideology, be it a backward nationalism or a backward dangerous racism, holds back the revolutionary struggles. Sum up what happened in the Soviet Union. Sum up what happened in China. Sum up what happened in any revolutionary struggle in the world. What is it that Lenin said about bankrupt bourgeois nationalism? Test it against your own practice, and what you will see is that proletarian internationalism is the guiding ideology of revolution. That is the way of the world. That is the future of man. The question of progress in making this merger. The fact is that it's not a question for subjective consciousness. The objective merger of the black people into the working class is a process that is intrinsic to the nature of monopoly capitalism. That black people today are in the factories. Black people today are in the post office, in the transport industries, in every basic industry in the United States. The objective merger has been accomplished substantially. However, at the same time, there are major subjective problems that exist. Certainly, racism is a vicious tool used by the ruling class, and therefore, Under certain conditions, the white working class, the white sector of the working class, takes on a racist character. But mind you, when the Boston busing issue emerges, that is a sign of weakness by the ruling class in the United States, because it's precisely in the greatest crisis of the capitalist system since the Great Depression began in 1929 that the ruling class in the United States must resort to supporting the Nazi organization, to supporting the Ku Klux Klan, to supporting bankrupt race theorists in the black community who hold race up as if it operates genetically through history without understanding it is racism that we fight against. These things come down so that they attempt to stop the unification of the working class. But that is not possible because it's not possible to stop the capitalist crisis. And as long as the capitalist crisis is upon us, people will be concerned about jobs, about eating, about health care. And those things are denied to all Americans. They're denied to the entire working class. And in fact, it is the entire working class that will rise up and destroy capitalism. The point about black power is simply this. You can't isolate black power out of the context of the entire movement since 1954, which more accurately would be referred to as the mass struggles of black people. Because there's a dialectical relationship between the struggle for integration, the denial of that, the assassination of our leaders, the move to power, to black power, the withdrawal into nationalism, the search for an internal integrity. And now what is happening is that, the black power movement, which encompassed many different class elements, has split. There are some people who are in the black power movement, who are in the black power movement precisely because that position, when taken to a reactionary stand, could be supported by the ruling class. There are many books that demonstrate just exactly who gets funded and from where and why and what the logical outcome of their activity is. The fact is, though, that the masses of people brought that into being, and the masses of people now are turning not to worshiping culture, the masses of people are turning to day-to-day struggle. Why is it, do you think, that people are more concerned about the fact that they're closing the public hospitals in every major city rather than celebrating a culture that exists in the past? The fact is they're struggling against the closing of those hospitals. I mean, the third world has many problems as a result of capitalism, but it is internal to capitalism that capitalism makes its profit, most of its profit. It is the exploitation of its own people. And it is precisely that black people are rising up against every day in every major city. There are major demonstrations. They're closing schools, they're closing hospitals, they're raising health prices and so forth. That leads me to the last point, and the point about the Carter, this new president for the ruling class. The fact is that Carter represents the same old confidence game, the same old trickery of the ruling class that existed as they tried to get out of the Great Depression with Franklin Delano Roosevelt. It's very important to understand that this millionaire peanut farmer is fronting off Christianity and is fronting off many black people, like Andy Young, for example, to the world with the thought that they will be able to convince the people in the United States and the people around the world that he's a good guy. We came here precisely to denounce him. We came here precisely to denounce Andy Young and all other lackeys of the U.S. imperialist class. But don't make a mistake that he doesn't have a policy toward Africa. Never make a mistake that imperialism does not have a policy for the world. Imperialism has no choice but to dominate the world and to fight it out to further dominate the world. And so then when we think of the U.S. imperialism, we think of a beast that cannot stop itself. The last point I want to make is to echo the sentiments of the comrade at the end of the table. There's only one way to know whether somebody is a CIA or not. That's to observe their practice in making revolution. If they can make revolution, then they're not. If they side and join with the CIA or with the U.S. government, regardless of their intentions, regardless of their motives, if they side with the U.S. capitalist class, objectively, that is exactly who they are.
Yeah, pardon me, my voice has changed since last I spoke. And I'll be brief but forceful. The question from the sister from the U.S. asked about Africans thinking that we are CIA agents is a question that shows desperation on Afro-Americans' part. You see, for a long time, due to the black culture consciousness, we held Africans in awe. And Africans took advantage of that. And Africans, continental Africans I'm talking about. And a lot of times, Africans would be very critical of Afro-Americans. And they always had the big brother attitude. And what happened was, what I was doing in this assembly every morning is putting us on the agenda because the continental Africans took us off the agenda. Part of that was our fault, part of that was their fault, but we're here to change that. I say we don't stand in awe of Africans, but in equality and in unity and struggle with Africans on the continent. There are people, they breathe and eat and sleep, have long meetings, don't come on time, just like anybody else. Look at them around you. See, so what happens is that CIA thing and that charge and not putting us on the agenda right, that comes because we have not imposed our will, our agenda. And when we have through practice and through organization put our mark on the world, then people will recognize us. And that duty is not in returning to Africa. What is this returning to Africa? That's a joke. If you want to return to Africa, return to real value. Return to the classless society that Africa has. Return to an unalienated, unoppressed people. Return to values of sharing wealth, where people know each other, are sisters and brothers. But as far as coming back here, sitting up house, that is running away from the fight at home. I want to stay where I am. I want to build our struggle. I want to help our people step back on the stage. I want to step back on the stage. I want our people to step back on the stage of human history as a free, proud, and productive people. My contribution to Africa and the world, to humanity, to internationalism, to any other progressive ism, is to win our own struggle, to build our own society, to undermine, overthrow, and get rid of all exploitation, all oppression in our own society. That's the reality. Therefore, I'm not an abstract internationalist. I'm not an abstract internationalist. I don't believe just coming to meetings or coming to Africa and just hobnobbing and rubbing elbows. It don't mean nothing to me. A blood is a blood. By the way, for the interpreter, we call blacks bloods. Same blood. You know what I mean? A blood. A blood is a blood. You know what I mean? And so we have got to understand that we have a duty in America. And if you remember, I keep saying that is a crucial duty because we are key people in a key country. And our liberation, I repeat again and again, will not only free that country and from the grotesque grasp of racism and capitalism, but at the same time, we'll free the world from that and bring humanity closer to liberation. When we talk about the Carter policy, my brother might have gotten a bit excited. I didn't come here to denounce Andy Young. I came here to denounce capitalism, imperialism, all those forms of human oppression. Young, that's another matter. Young will have to deal with his contradictions, and if you find it wrong, don't let him trick you because he got a black face. But you owe it to him to see what he can do, and let history indict or absolve him. But I said that because my other brother asked me to say that we cannot say that we just came here to denounce every black person is working in government. See, if so, then we'd have to start listing African countries that don't have the social practices that we agree with and denounce all those. So we've got to be fair about that. Sometimes Africans and Asians and Latin Americans expect us to do what they're not doing. So let's talk about equality in international relationship. When I talk about socialism, what do I mean? Five quick things. Number one, working class, working people ownership and control of the means of production, of the means to satisfy human need. Why is that so important? Because those that control the means to satisfy human needs at the same time control those people with those needs. Nobody should have that power but the people with those needs. Second, I mean an egalitarian distribution of wealth. The world belongs to those that have built it, that have constructed, that inhabit it, and that is the masses of people. The masses of workers and peasants who actually create social wealth. Third, I mean a planned economy where we sit down, we the people who consume and produce, decide what we produce, decide what we consume, and not waste time producing 10 types of toothpaste with the same ingredient just to make profit. Fourth, when I say socialism, I mean a participatory industrial and political democracy, where like in Guinea, a person is fined if they dare not go to a meeting where a decision on their destiny and daily life is being made. People don't have the right not to participate in shaping their future. They don't have the right to be ignorant, as Castro has said in Cuba. They don't have the right not to take part in building a new world, a new woman, man, and child. They don't have that right. And that's what I mean when I say socialism. And finally, I mean, as a part of internationalism, the unity and struggle of all oppressed and exploited people. Those are the basic 5 points of the socialism I talk about when I talk about it. Sixth point we asked was, what about, well, another point, I've lost a number. What is black? What is black power? Black power is the dialectical part of black powerlessness. Black people called for black power because they were powerless. That is only dialectical. If you are denied and deformed in your dignity as a black person, then you talk black power. And people can talk rhetoric all they want about us not saying it in those terms. But you say it in your terms. You just got an advantage, Mr. African, Mrs. African. You are the majority in your country. Therefore, you never have to mention race. You never have to talk in color terms. All you have to do is say, majority rule. And so you have that advantage. All struggles, and everybody who says she or he is a scientific socialist ought to know that. All struggles are socio-historical. All struggles depend upon time and place, and their application in lessons might be international, but the essence, the core of what they are must be evolved, must be created out of conditions in which they occur. And if you don't understand that, you missed scientific socialism 1A. Black power, the brother asked, what are the negatives and positives? The negatives is that there was a lot of symbolic expressions, a lot of running and raving a lot of times, and not building of structures. But the positive is that we actually advanced the struggle, that this was one of the forms our struggle took. And just like all struggles don't begin automatic socialism, so all of our struggles didn't begin automatic socialism. It's a dialectical process, and you have to accept that. But what did it really mean when it summed up then? Black power to us meant, one, self-respect, a movement that demanded that, that burned cities to get that. It meant self-defense, that we were tired of police brutality, tired of exploitation and oppression, and finally, self-determination. That we demanded the right to decide our future, to participate in every decision that affected our destiny and daily life. Why the link? Why the merger? Because we can't win a revolution by ourselves, but not only that, it's only right that humanity shouldn't be divided. It is a capitalist that has cut a wedge, that has driven a wedge between us. It is a capitalist that went through a long, elaborate process to itemize differences so that he could degrade us that much more effectively. We cannot recognize that kind of division. We have to recognize that that's a false division of humanity, that the real differences are not as great as a chance for unity and building a new world, so that we talk in terms of building a new world. Let me close by saying again, when you go back, tell your people, you met a new Afro-American people here. Say to them, here is an Afro-American people, confident of its future, believing that we belong to the rising tide of history. That there are, that these people told you, that there are two trends in history. That which is coming into being and growing strong, and that which is dying, decaying, and passing away. And that they had the audacity to say that they belong to that which was growing strong, rising, coming into its own, and participating in the building of a new world. Thank you, and in unity and struggle, we again greet you for the Afro-American people. Okay.